Hello, 91.5 listeners. You are listening to WGLZ West Liberty, where we are passionately vocal. My name is Paul, and if you are a regular listener of this station, you would know I normally go on the air Mondays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. with The Paul Show. But I am actually here in the studio for a special interview that I have on the phone. My guest today, her name is Molly Bancha. She is a special educator in the Pittsburgh area, and she is a former Wheeling native. Molly, can you hear me?
I can. Hi.
We appreciate you being here on the radio.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, great. Well, I like to start out, I think it's fairly interesting, especially for a lot of the listeners here on WGLZ are currently West Liberty students. As you know, growing up in Wheeling, West Liberty is a very small community, and I think a lot of these students that are here are planning on making a move to a larger area. So given that you grew up here in Wheeling in a smaller area, can you tell us how exactly you ended up living in the suburbs of Pittsburgh?
Sure. So I actually, when I was looking for a place post-college, I had dogs, so I was looking for a place where I could have my dog with me and just a, you know, a nice town that has a good school district so that I could hopefully find a good job. And everyone kept saying, you know, like Mount Lebanon and the Pittsburgh area is great, you should really look there. So I started looking at the school districts, and I really, really did fall in love with the city. I came for a summer to see how I liked it, and just was really overwhelmed with what a good education this city provides to their students. And in general, just what a nice community the Pittsburgh area is. There's so much culture here. There's such a sense of community, very similar to Wheeling, West Virginia.
Okay. What do you think are some differences living in a larger city that you may not have anticipated?
You're definitely going to have a lot more traffic than I was anticipating. But you're also, you know, there's so much culture, and there's just so much to do that you may not be aware of. Like Pittsburgh has just, there's, you know, so many museums, so many different theaters and performing arts centers. And even just in like the suburbs of Pittsburgh, there's so much to do here that I just really have been enjoying.
Okay, well, and I guess finally, for anyone planning on moving to a larger city from a more rural area, what advice could you offer them?
I would say check the city out before you go. Like, you know, come up, spend a weekend, and see if it's really for you. Because, you know, sometimes you move and you're not really sure what you're getting into, or you move and you think that, okay, there's just, you know, the city, you think of like the city life, so like downtown areas. But there's so much more to that. There's, you know, you can find, if you like to hike, there's tons of trails that I'm sure you can find in any big city that you move to. So I would just really say, like, check it out, spend a weekend there, and look specifically for the things that you enjoy and make sure your city has that.
And for yourself, what's something that you discovered in the city that's a new favorite of yours? Like something you didn't anticipate but then you really enjoy after living in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, so when I thought of Pittsburgh, I think of, you know, like downtown Pittsburgh, and I thought of, like, the theater district and the strip district and all of that. But I did not realize how many, like, little places to go hiking are. Like, there's Frick Park. I've taken my dog there multiple times. And there's Bird Park, which is smaller, and Peters Lake Park. Like, all of those areas that I could just, like, go be outside to kind of remind me of West Virginia. All of those little areas I did not anticipate kind of stumbling upon, but I'm very happy that I found them. They're like little hidden gems in this area.
Well, good. Now I'm going to real quickly throw back to the music, and when we return, we will be discussing your job as a special educator in the Pittsburgh area. So please, everyone, but please stay with us here on WGLZ West Liberty. Welcome back, WGLZ listeners. If you are just now joining us, I am joined in the studio, actually on the phone, with Molly Bancha. She is a special needs educator in the Pittsburgh area. Molly, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. Thank you for having me.
Well, good. So, before the break, we were talking about your life in Pittsburgh, but now I'd like to actually dive into what you do in Pittsburgh. So, as I had mentioned earlier, I said you are a special needs educator. However, before we had started this interview, you had told me that that is only partially true as your job title. Could you describe your job title in more detail for me?
Sure. So I have taught in various different classrooms in the school district, in the Mount Lebanon School District. I have taught as a long-term sub in a learning in a middle school learning support classroom. I've taught as a classroom aide and a long-term sub in the ABA verbal behavior program in an elementary school classroom. So I've had a lot of different hats in the time that I've been here. But I most recently have been working in the learning support classroom and have really enjoyed my time at that setting, as well as really enjoyed my time in the ABA setting as well.
Now what made you and what led you to becoming a teacher in the first place?
So I originally did not think that I would become a teacher. I, growing up, always wanted to work with animals, and then I went to college and had a brief, spent a year thinking that I wanted to be a fashion merchandising major. Kind of hopped all over the place, really thinking about what I wanted to do. When I really thought about it, when I finally like took a break and was like, okay, I need to really think about what I'd like with my future. I thought about growing up, the kind of teachers that I had, and the schools that I went to, and I had. You know, I had really, really good teachers. I had teachers that I felt really supported me, really wanted me to be successful. And then I thought, not everyone is as fortunate to have teachers that, you know, push you to be successful. And I thought about like how my what my school experience looked like versus someone who maybe did not have the teachers that I had and did not have that kind of support system to push you to be a better person. And especially growing up, I have wonderful parents who always supported me. And I thought, too, what about this, the kids out there that, you know, maybe they don't have a support system at school that's supporting them, and maybe they also don't have someone at home that's pushing them to be better. So I thought I would really love to, you know, be a teacher and try to be that person for a child that might be struggling.
Well, I chuckled to myself when you said you wanted to work with animals and then you chose to work with children because they're fairly similar, I feel.
Time.
Now that's really fascinating that you really feel like it's almost like you owe it to students to give them the education that you had.
Yeah,
Now,
absolutely.
why did you end up going to special needs education?
So one of the placements that we had to do as a when I first started getting my degree in special education and early childhood education. They, you have a year to decide if you know, because special education is not for everybody. So your first couple of placements, they try to put you in a special education environment so that you can realize, okay, is this for me? Is this not for me? And you have time to, you know, switch your major. So one of the first placements I was at was at the Barber Center, and that is a partial hospitalization residential treatment center in Erie, Pennsylvania. And that is primarily for individuals that have pretty severe cognitive disabilities, and they also have some medical disabilities. So I was placed there, and I was put into a room with, I believe there was 8 students, ranging from 10 to 16. And everyone was a little different on where they fell with what they were identified with. So we had some kids with severe autism, some students with cerebral palsy, just, you know, all over the special education board. But in that classroom, I loved it. The staff there was amazing. The kids there were so fun once you got to know them. And I remember walking out of there after my first week, and I just felt like, okay, this is exactly where I am supposed to be. This is the most fun I have had in my education career in a while. So I knew then that that's where I should be.
Wow. So what are some of the unique challenges that you face teaching those that do have special needs?
So when you're working with the population that I typically work with, so individuals that are autism is a spectrum. So when you're working with kids that are a little more severe on the spectrum, challenges that you might face are some of your students may not have the capabilities to talk yet. So you're going to see a level of frustration, as I think anyone could imagine, if you're trying to vocalize something and you don't have the words to say what you want. So you might run into some aggression and some frustration, but at the end of the day, I think that when you really look at the kid that you're working with and you recognize, okay, I understand you're frustrated, I understand what you need, and you really get to know your kid, seeing those little milestones make all of the struggles and all of the exhaustion you might face in your day so worth it.
Oh, wow. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up one thing while I have you on the phone, and that is currently we are experiencing a, what I would like to call an epidemic of pseudoscience nonsense, where you see all over social media and the internet, parents are terrified, wrongly so, that vaccines can cause autism. How have you encountered that in your work, if at all?
I have had some families who are, while they may not be like anti-vaccinations, they are very cautious about what they feed their children. There's a lot of, you know, studies out there, or maybe not so much studies, but a lot of thought out there that different diets, you know, not vaccinating your children, that all of those things can cause autism, or that they can make autism worse. There is really no science at all to back up that vaccinations cause autism. I think in the end, the way that I look at it is, as much as it's frustrating to hear things like that and to hear, you know, people be very anti-vaccination, anti-medicine, in my line of work, I try to look at it as, I can't imagine how scary it would be to wake up one day and your child is not who you thought your child was going to be. And so I try to look at it with, you know, some kindness. I try to say what I know about autism and what I know about, you know, medical studies and how vaccinations are absolutely safe. But I try my best to just handle it with kindness and try to put myself in that family's shoes.
That's a very interesting perspective, because it is easy when you see people rejecting science to get frustrated. However, yeah, I haven't looked at it from the perspective of waking up one day as the parent and realizing that. Yeah, very interesting. So I guess I have a few more questions for you. Going back to your teaching, could you just describe your average day in the classroom?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the classrooms that I have been working in, they are in applied behavior analysis, verbal behavior program. So applied behavior analysis is the type of, it's like a specialized therapy that students who are more severe on the autism spectrum, that is the best type of environment for them. So it's a program where we focus on behavior. So like looking at a behavior and trying to analyze, okay, is this child trying to escape from something? Is this an attention-seeking behavior? And then we also work very specifically on language. So it's ideally like breaking down conventional speech to the very basics of something. So we'll teach a child, if they don't know how to the name for a cup, we'll show them a picture of a cup and then teach them how to say cup. And then eventually we'll take the picture away and we'll show them the real object of a cup. And we work up to them asking, you know, labeling the cup, to then asking for the cup, to then using the cup in a full sentence. It's a very interesting program. I really love it. I've seen so much success with children who have come to me not speaking at all and then who leave, and they're able to speak, which is amazing. In the classroom, we work in 20-minute sessions, so we'll rotate for each kid. Typically, the rooms are capped at 8 students, depending on the needs of the students in that classroom. And there's typically, depending, again, on the needs, there's typically about 4 adults, so that we can try to give each student as much one-on-one attention as needed, because it is really important when you're working with kids who have significant behaviors that you're able to give them that direct and one-on-one instruction. So we'll work in 20-minute sessions, rotating around with each kid to give them this specialized ABA therapy. And then we'll also do some life skills lessons. So we'll work in a big group and we'll learn different life skills. So how to be, you know, how to cross the street safely, who, you know, community helpers, who can you go to when you are, if you are lost, who is someone who can help you. Very basic life skills like cooking, which is so much fun to do with a group of young kids. And yeah, it's a really fun day. It makes the day go very quickly, but I love it. I think it's a really great program, and I think that I've seen so much success with it that I wouldn't want to be doing anything else.
Huh. All right. Well, I guess finally, do you have, since I am on West Liberty's campus and on their college radio, do you have any advice for any students that are currently in education programs that are planning on becoming educators like yourself?
My advice that I was given a long time ago was to, once you have a job, education is a very, like, it takes a lot out of you. It's not like a typical 9-to-5 job where you just go home and you're done. Like, you are constantly thinking about the kids that you teach. Even if you don't think you're going to be that person, you wind up being that person. So the best advice I ever received was to have one day out of the week where you don't do anything school-related. You just do something that is self-care for you. And that makes all the difference in the world. Like, come in and help you go into your classroom the next day as the best person you can be. And just know that you're doing a really important job.
Huh. All right, well, thank you. I believe that's going to conclude our interview. I want to thank you again, Molly, for joining me here and discussing your life a little bit.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And I want to thank all of our listeners here that have stuck with me through this. So I will be back in the studio Monday at my normal time, 2 to 3. I will be discussing one of two of the new movies this weekend, either 21 Bridges or The Irishman. Yes, so please enjoy the next song. And once again, you've been listening to WGLZ West Liberty, where we are passionately vocal.